Hi, this is Tony Funeka at Cover Magazine. Thank you very much for joining us on this series. Today we're talking to the CEO of 10X Investments, Toby van Heerden. Toby, thank you very much for chatting to me today.
Tony, thank you very much for having me.
Right, we're talking about retirement, which is a very tough thing in South Africa. We know the challenges and that everybody talks about it all the time. But your report actually, and the title of your report, probably sums it up very well. It is the Retirement Reality Report. So maybe you can just give us a little bit of background about the reality of this report.
Thanks, Tony. Yes, there's we aptly name it a reality report, because what we see is there's a massive disconnect or a massive gap between people's expectations and the actual reality at the end of the day. So the first big reality is that only 6% of people can retire comfortably when they get to retirement. Now, that's a number that's been staying static for a very long period of time. And just to maybe put some more color around what does it mean to retire comfortably, it means that the day before you retire and the day after you retire, you feel like you're in the same position. In other words, the expenses that you've got to pay, you pay the expenses normally, you can have the same quality of life pre and post retirement. So 6% number is a very, very low number. That number hasn't moved at all. And the survey that we've done in 2023 was really the seventh one we've done in the series. So it's been going, the sixth one we've done in the series. We've been doing it for 7 years. So we took a gap in 2022. Previous one was in 2021, and the progression of numbers from 2021 to 2023 has been very, very marginal. So small movements in those years. But what we've seen is a significant move actually from when we started to now. So while the 6% numbers have remained the same, the awareness and the worry that people have around retirement is increasing. Less people are able to save for retirement. One, because they don't have enough money. So 70% of people saying we don't have enough cash to retire well. But then 37% of people say we start too late, which is a big worry for us. And that talks really around the educational component of retiring. And also this expectation, you know, I'm young, I'm 25 or 30 years old, I've got 40 years left to retirement. And things will be okay when I get there. I'll start thinking about it when I'm 50. And I think that's where the report really dives into, is this difference between the expectation and then the reality of it when you get there.
Some of the findings that you have in the report, especially when it comes to the differences in how the different age groups see retirement and when they might retire and their savings, etc., but also how does that change as they get older? In other words, when they're younger, they think in a certain way. Does that change as they get older and reality sets in?
Yes, so let's unpack the age group scenarios, because the numbers we show is pretty much on average. So a big number move over the last 7 years for us, the younger part of the population being more aware of saving. So there's a bigger worry about younger people that they need to save for retirement, but they still don't execute on that. So they still don't do anything about it. So at least, you know, there's a sort of a bit of a snowball that's being created there in terms of worry. But what we clearly find is that once you reach 50, it becomes, okay, now retirement is around the corner, and I've got to do something in a very small window of time left to retirement. And so the dichotomy that you have if you start at age 50 is that you have to save roughly around 40 to 50% of your salary. So half your salary, you've got to save every month to be in the same position as somebody age 25 or 30 that would have saved 10 to 15% of their salary to be part of the 6% of people that's going to retire comfortably. So that's the impact of leaving it late. And there's this massive impact there is around the compounding interest component. So what we also see is people at age 50, because that reality is now becoming much closer to them, there's a bigger worry around, I haven't done enough. And we see the numbers increasing. So currently, 15% of people, a small number, 15% of people said, I definitely don't have enough money to retire when I'm age 65. Over 50% of people at age 50 say, I don't have enough money to retire when I'm at, at, at my retirement age. And so that worry is then much more exacerbated at that age. And then they want to do something, but I don't want to say it's too late, but you've got to do much more at that age than when you would have started at the younger age.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the reality of it is, you know, people sort of start realizing as they get older that they have to do something, they start trying to do something. And then as they get sort of closer to retirement age, they realize that they haven't done enough, et cetera. And as you now said, the number sort of people that can comfortably retire is 6%. And then let's say maybe that goes up to 15% or even 20% of people that could retire, but they're going to have to make quite a bit of adjustment, et cetera, to do that. The question then beckons, should we not be thinking of retirement differently and looking at, you know, the concept of retirement, is that not maybe outdated when it comes to balancing that with income?
So again, I think you talk to, I think a very, very big concept, and it becomes a socioeconomic sort of principle at its best, really. Most of the people that get to this retirement age think, you know, I'm going to be able to work for longer. So this thing, I'm not going to actually retire, I'm just going to work on, you know, I'm still young and fit, so I'm going to be able to work on. What you've actually seen from the numbers is that the number of early retirements at employers have increased significantly over the last 2 years. So previously, early retirements was roughly around 29%. In 23, it was 37%. So 37% of employers saying to people, actually, I want you to go earlier than you intended, because I'm rather going to get a younger person into the workforce because of our unemployment considerations. The other important thing what we've seen is that in 21, 40% of people retired not out of their own free will. In other words, they got to their retirement date. They actually wanted to work for longer, but the employer said, sorry, you got to go. That's 30% in 21. In 23, that number was 40%. So in 2 years, the number of people that got to retirement date and think, you know what, I can work longer, my employer is going to allow me for another year or two or three, that number has increased 25%. So with that beckons the bigger question, you know, around what do we do with our older people as they're still economically active, they can still work, you know, in some professions you actually become, that's the age where you sort of almost become the best version of your profession. Some professions, not so much. So that's where the replacement happens. So it becomes a massive socioeconomic issue, because now people are forced to retire. They still actually could be economically quite active, but they go to their children now and they've got to stay with their kids, and they become their responsibility. And that's where the massive dilemma really is going to hit us quite hard in the next couple of years.
And do you think that can change or will change if we have better economic growth? In other words, people will keep the older people on longer because they can still take young people in?
For sure. I mean, you know, that's why I say our employment numbers, I think, is totally skewed, because unemployment numbers looks at when you're in working age. So now you're going to sit with this big bunch of people that's post working age, so they're actually not effectively part of our employment numbers because they're past the working age, but they are still very much able to be employed and to work. And as employers, obviously, if your business is doing well financially, the business is doing better, you would be able to retain some of those staff that are really key for longer periods of time. It also can create an informal economic sector where people with skill sets can start their own thing and create sort of jobs then, you know, for younger people coming in. So because of the skill set that these people has created over their career of 30, 40 years, they can actually create businesses themselves and create more economic growth for the country like that. So it's super important that we get this kick-started.
Yeah, absolutely. That beckons the question for me in terms of trying to solve these dilemmas. You know, the investment industry and the advisor industry has sort of almost taken part of that burden onto themselves by saying, well, how do we coach people into being more diligent with regards to their savings and investment? How do we try to create an environment where people are more knowledgeable, They understand the dynamics of investment and retirement and expectations better, etc. So it's almost like our industry, as the investment and advising industry, has taken on that responsibility. But when you now mention the socioeconomic challenges and the expectations of employers in terms of bringing in younger and letting go older, where does that responsibility of the industry, investment industry, and the advisor really start? Should we just look at getting better performance, or should we look at how people behave in terms of, and then lastly, should we be getting involved socioeconomically or politically and trying to change this employer-employee status?
Tony, it's a very good question, and I think a very relevant question. And I mean, first of all, with hindsight, I think the investment industry, the wealth managers, advisors, we've done a fair job at helping people into retirement journey. And like any sort of industry, you know, there's really good advisors and very good service providers and asset managers out there. And then on the other side is also, you know, people that do not do things as well as they should. But as an average, I think we've done a fair job. But to educate the masses and to educate people that hasn't got the basic level of education right on investments is super difficult. And that's why I'm a fundamental believer that you have to have regulation that forces people to do the right thing. So education can only get you that far, but regulation is really the aim that should get you. Now, regulation, in my view, is one two-part system. I think it's one way towards it. I think it might have some negative impacts in the short term, but it's the longer-term solution, I think, is pretty, pretty good in terms of what it wants to do in terms of preservation. Secondly, I think there must be a much bigger focus on fees and costs that managers charge for their products, because that exacerbated fee that a client gets or pays for his product, you know, eats into his retirement saving down the track. So there must be a much more focus by the regulator on maximum fees that you can charge for certain products, and therefore protecting the consumer at the other end when you have a regulated environment where you are forcing them to go into a certain product. So I think there's that sort of components that we can do better. We as an industry, I don't think we self-regulate that well at all. So we know, you know, different guys charge different fees, but we don't self-regulate that well. So it needs to come from a regulatory component that really looks after the masses in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know of somebody, sometimes even in the family, that have lost their retirement savings to some sort of wrong investment that should never have been allowed. Yeah, absolutely. So now the sort of final question from my side, which is probably the more difficult one, Trevi, is if you had a magic wand, how would you go about solving this dilemma?
So that is a really tough question. So as I said, I think the first thing I would do is in the formal sector, I would definitely regulate, first of all, forced retirement savings for all people in the regular in the formal employment sector. So if you have a corporate, you must have a system, you must have a certain minimum level of savings requirements and a certain maximum of fee that you pay towards that saving program. So I think that's the first thing I would do for the formal sector. The informal sector is much, and you make that an employer's problem. So it's part of the overall cost to company that the employer has got to look at. Informal sector is much harder, and that's where the sort of socioeconomic impact come in. Because we have such a large informal employment sector in South Africa, you know, there it really comes down from like the likes of a state grant and how we look at those and how the GIPF is run and all of those sort of socioeconomic or social benefits and structures. And there, an example would be what they do, for instance, you know, in the Middle East and in Europe, where you have these big sovereign wealth funds that is created for the longevity of the people and for the longevity of that country, where it's a savings regime that where money gets put aside by the government for people as these dilemmas sort of come up and they can fund from that. And so that's the sort of the two-prong approach I would take in this regard.
Trevi, thank you very much for those comments. Certainly a tough a sort of problem to solve. But you know, if the industry worked together with the regulator, which at least the two-pot system has gone some way of trying to solve that issue, we could potentially get there. As I mentioned to you earlier on, I'm going to try and put together a panel where we can discuss this a bit more and have some advisors in there as well, and see, you know, how they feel about their responsibility and how far they can go in terms of coaching and all of those sort of things.
Thanks, Danny. I mean, it's a starter, but it's such a politicized issue that, you know, at the moment, you know, medical aid is a much more prevalent thing and a much more real thing. That's why politically medical aids is sort of pushing ahead. And we've seen with this two-pot, I mean, how long has it been taken government to get to a point? And even now where we're at the point, it looks like it's going to get kicked down the road even more, because you have GIPF and Transnet are sitting on different regulations and stuff like that. So it's not been well pushed, and there's no real momentum and focus politically around us to get it done. But it's that slog, the frog getting boiled slowly syndrome, where we're going to wipe our eyes out in 40 years or 30 years, even less, you know, 20 years. It's going to be a massive mess. And not just retirement wise, but as I said, socioeconomic consequence of this is dire. People are going to live longer and they're going to have to see the issues.
Yeah, especially with an economy that's not growing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not helping now.
Yeah. Kirby, thank you so much. It was great.
Thanks so much. Thanks for your time.